TSN 690.
Well, you might think I'm way off course, but you could sum up America's political discourse, and you might could believe it, or maybe you won't. Red states got the Waffle House,
blue states don't.
Might be the bacon and cheese grit diet, or the sausage that makes folks lean to the right, or Uncle Joe's pork chops big as a boat. Red states got the Waffle House,
blue states don't.
Yeah, his name's Boots. I got boots on the ground. That's what I said when, as a lieutenant governor. He was a draft dodger. His father was a general in World War II. And he came to Vermont in the late 60s, got away from the Vietnam War. And he lives in Newberry on a dirt road in the middle of nowhere, kind of like I do.
So let the pundits worry about the gender.
That is Bill Lee, who's going to sweat out the election results at home in Craftsbury for the state of Vermont tomorrow. And his running mate, Boots Wadooski. Honest to God, that's his name, Boots Wadooski. Along with Rod Francis and Mitch Gallo, Mitch Melnick until 7 o'clock. Final edition of the Owls this week on the day that the Owls part ways with Jim Popp. We just had Mark Waitman in studio for the last half an hour. And then at 8 o'clock tonight, Seattle Seahawks hosting the Buffalo Bills.
Michael Farber on Melnick in the Afternoon, brought to you by Wrangler's Premium Performance Cool Vantage Jeans. Don't sweat the job. Do like Carey Price. Choose Wrangler's Cool Vantage Jeans to be cool and stay cool.
Good evening, Michael. How you doing?
Good evening. You know, I was in an airport last night in Boston, and who walked by me? Mitt Romney.
Oh, I thought you were going to say Boots Wadooski walked by you.
I couldn't pick out Boots Wadooski if he was in a police lineup. Bill Lee, yes. Boots Wadooski, no.
So Mitt Romney, huh? You know you're in trouble as a party when Mitt Romney seems like a Democrat, right?
Well, I voted, as I am wont to do. My vote is in New Jersey. I'm not sure it's going to make much of a difference. But, you know, usually presidential elections, and I'm still a U.S. citizen, I vote and then pretty much forget about it. But this year, I've been checking 538 polls, you know, the Nate Silver site.
Yep.
Yeah, pretty much every day and sometimes a couple of times a day. It just seems to me such an extraordinary election. As somebody said to me, my respect, he says, you know, this isn't really an election. This is an IQ test.
Well, David Frum is hardly a flaming left winger, right? He is a noted conservative, even though he's born in this country, kind of like the reverse of Michael here. And former speechwriter of George Bush,
right?
He announced he's voting for Hillary Clinton.
You know, I go back to 08, and I was a Clinton fan then. I preferred her to Obama. But it was an extraordinary moment. I landed in Boston on the Wednesday, the day after the election. And it was a very early morning flight. And so now it's 8:30, and I'm in the streets of Boston, and I'm trying to find a place for breakfast. And lo and behold, there's a woman walking in my direction, and she is dressed in a business suit and a coat and sneakers, as is the way in many major American cities. And there's a doorman outside one of the buildings, and she walks up to him, gives him a high five, and keeps walking. Not a word was exchanged, but it was just one of those extraordinary moments that people were extremely happy. I don't see that happening this time if Clinton wins, but it was a cathartic moment in 2008, and there was a sense of hope. This time, I don't sense that at all.
Well, we weren't planning to discuss this, but since I started it, knowing Michael's somewhat interested in politics as well, and we threw this at Bill, like anybody around the world who's been paying attention to this, they look at this, the United States of America, and they see it polarized like never before.
Well, I'm going to go back to the Vietnam War, where I think the fissures first really appeared. There was the Love It or Leave It crowd. There were the student demonstrators. And for the first time, the Eisenhower years were far in the rearview mirror. And the, even in the early years, the 60s, Kennedy united much of the country. And Johnson, I think, was a fairly popular president until the quagmire of Vietnam. And that's where the first real divisions occurred. And I'm not sure ever since then that this country has really viewed the world the same way, depending on what side of the intellectual or cultural divide you found yourself. And it's just been exacerbated by the candidacy, certainly, of Trump, and I think also Hillary Clinton.
All right, and just before we move on,
saying something long enough, people will believe it to be the truth. I was interviewed today by a young lady in Montreal, and she said, "What was the one thing you found out most about the U.S. voter this year?" And I said, "I can't believe how ignorant they are, how dumb they are."
All right, so let's talk hockey.
Okay.
I obviously felt terrible, as anybody did, for Al Montoya. I mean, that seems to be the topic du jour 2 days later, because nobody was going to talk about it until today. Michel Therrien admitted it was like a gut-wrenching decision. Damned if he does, damned if he doesn't. Carey Price, rightfully, wouldn't talk about it publicly. Conversation between him and Montoya is private. Do you see any possible fallout at all from this?
I thought it was a great decision by Coach Therrien. I really do, because when you're a backup goalie, especially to a star goalie, maybe the best goalie in hockey, once in a while you have to eat it. And he ate it with a tablespoon. He wasn't very good. The rest of the team wasn't very good. And that's what you're getting paid for. But what I think he did was gain a lot of respect from his teammates who might not have known him well, certainly before this year. So I think that's in his contract, in his future. And I spoke to a former GM today. He says that performance maybe earned Montoya an extra year, either in Montreal or somewhere else, because he was the guy willing to take the bullet or forced to take the bullet, and that stands him in good stead. Spoke to a GM yesterday about this, and it was a big topic of conversation around the league, and he wasn't quite as on board with what Therrien did, as I believe, because it seemed to me that it was obvious. But he said, listen, teams are all about protecting the group, and they let one member of the group and left him alone and left him out to hung him out to dry. So he said, yeah, I suppose that was the right thing to do, especially with Carey Price's injury history. You don't want him coming into that game cold. The game was lost. He was going to play the next night against Philadelphia. But that team should be buying dinner for Montoya for a month. And I said, yeah, okay, I can see that.
Yeah. See, I disagree. I guess I'm in the minority. Did you guys weigh in on this? Because I just, sometimes, you know, stuff happens that you don't plan for, and go warm up and get in there and help us out here. Help your backup out here. I mean, it's what are we talking about? 25 minutes? You think the Columbus Blue Jackets were going to pull a full court press once Carey Price got in the game and they were going to embarrass him too?
Well, I will tell you this. Carey Price has had injuries, lower body injuries. In fact, there was, according to somebody attached to the World Cup group, that there was some worry that he might not have been able to play the second game against Europe because of some lower body issues. They are ongoing with Price. You don't want him in that game under any circumstances. It's not just been this one game that should have people worried. And I know when you lose 10-0, that's going to be the flashpoint. But if you look at the game starting with Toronto, the Canadiens weren't very good. Not very good against Vancouver, Columbus, obviously, and not very good against Philadelphia. So So they've won three of those four, and maybe we should just say, wow, local team won those games, 2 points, forget about them. But right about this time last year, there was a fall off in the quality of play. This time they do have Carey Price to bail them out most of the time, but there are some issues to be dealt with. And I think so much of that focus is going to be on the 10 goals, and I understand that, but there are other things going on.
All right. Well, if there are other things going on, which includes a possible injury to Carey Price that they don't want him to re-aggravate, why would you put him on a plane?
Why would you dress him? Yeah, I understand that. But if there, we know there have been injuries in the past, and if he is not properly warmed up and has to go in there, you run the risk of bad things happening to him. Maybe you carry a third goalie in these instances, and you don't dress Carey Price as a backup. That would be an alternative, but I just saw no upside to playing Carey Price at that moment.
All right, so it's, as I've said repeatedly, for the as long as he is playing this season, there is going to be a hold your breath factor to Carey Price, because if you're so concerned about that, then you should be concerned about it every time he plays.
Well, you can't bubble wrap him, Mitch. But yeah, here's a guy with some lower body history. And yeah, you should be keeping a close eye on him and not putting him in situations where he isn't properly warmed up. And just monitor it. But yeah, you know what the Canadians look like without Carey Price. And it's not pretty. We live that from November till April.
All right, let's before we run out of time, let's move on. Jim Popp, after 20 years, is out as general manager. We just chatted in depth about it live in the studio with Mark Whiteman, president and COO of the CEO of the Alouettes. Jim Popp will not talk to anybody, apparently. He issued a statement, but is not taking calls and doesn't apparently plan on saying anything publicly. To me, he was fired. It seems obvious that he was fired, no matter how they say mutual, whatever they'd want to describe it. How's that? I'm curious in Toronto how that is being played.
Well, Toronto was interested in Jim Popp.
No kidding.
People outside, especially if he can bring his buddy Mark Trestman with him. I don't know why Trestman would want to coach again as a head coach in the CFL. I can imagine if he were an offensive coordinator at a big school, big college program in the States, he'd be very happy. But as far as Pop's dismissal or his decision to leave, Mike, two words, about time. This hasn't worked for a while. It didn't work when he hired Dan Hawkins. It didn't work when he didn't hire Tom Higgins. It didn't work when he was coaching. So you look at the situation, and it had run its course. I first met Jim Popp when he was GM of the Baltimore Stallions, and he's been the only GM that a lot of younger Montrealers know who care about the CFL. So it just wasn't working well. He hadn't really been able to identify the quarterback to take the place of Calvillo. He made a couple of bad, or certainly one bad coaching hire in Hawkins, and maybe two if you count himself. So it was time. And wish Jim Popp well. And when he concentrates on being a GM, certainly he has a great track record. But it wasn't going to be here anymore.
Always enjoy talking to award-winning writer and broadcaster Michael Farber with us every Monday after 6 on Melnick in the Afternoon on TSN 690. Enjoy the rest of the week, Michael, and especially tomorrow.
Okay, thanks.
To the common, and then I'm going to head down to my organic farm mate, my running mate, Lieutenant Governor Boots Wadowski. He's an old horse logger and organic farmer.
It really is his name. That's unreal. Boots Wadowski in Vermont.
So great.
I'll be at the hockey game tomorrow, obviously, but the only thing I wish I could watch is the local coverage of the Vermont race and Bill's concession speech at some point with Boots Wadowski.